This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
We hear the buzzword vision a lot when it comes to organizations and structural planning, but how do you develop your company's vision? And who is even in charge of that development? And if you aren't even part of the vision creation, how does this even affect you at all? You're listening to Raise Your Game. I'm Christine Wong. And for our monthly Leadernomics show, I'm speaking to Caroline Ong, the country general manager for Leadernomics here in Malaysia. So first of all, welcome back to the studio, Caroline.
Thank you, Christine. Very nice to be back.
Yeah. So I guess we should start with kind of how visions work and the kind of science behind them, because I think when we say vision, it sounds very kind of like airy-fairy, right? So there is actually like a scientific background behind this, and it's the fact that hope is a very motivational factor. And you actually brought up some really interesting scientific proof of that, right?
Yeah. And, you know, you're really right about the airy-fairy part. And, you know, even whether you say hope or vision, people are like, yeah, you know, this lofty ideals.
Right.
Are there any science behind this? Or is just like people's mind, you know, playing games on you or something?
Yeah.
Okay, there is. In fact, there are. Not really. Okay. And I'll start with the first one. And the first one is 1991. There's Dr. Charles Scheidner. And he has colleagues, of course. They came up together to look at what you call the hope theory. All right. And now, what is that? There is two things. One is it's agency thinking, and the second is pathway thinking. Now, what's, you know, it sounds kind of foreign.
Yeah.
Like, you know, honestly, for myself, right, when we think about agency, it's like, oh, is this like, you know, life insurance or something?
Right. But it means your agency as a person, right?
Yes, exactly. So it is really about your own motivation to initiate and to sustain action so that you can achieve certain goals. Mm-hmm. That's one for agency. But the second one, not only you have the motivation to initiate it, but you know what? You need the pathway or the capacity to find ways towards those goals.
Right.
So that's these two parts of it to the hope theory. And in the Journal of Personality and Social Psychology, now, what happened was they actually did a research with about 4,000 people, and they found that, now, this is the really interesting part, college grades, yeah, so a lot of us, I'm sure quite a number of us have gone through college,
right.
And people will be like, you know, how do you do well in college and stuff like that, but in this case, you can actually predict. Okay, and predicting not really based on what they did previously, which is like the SAT scores, but the level of hope that they had at the beginning of the first semester. So you can actually tell.
So if they were more hopeful, I think the correlation was that they were more successful in the end.
Uh-huh.
That's so interesting. It's kind of like when people talk about, you know, visualizing a success for yourself and stuff like that. It sounds like, you know, pseudoscience in a way, but there is a kind of I guess a kind of a brain chemistry that happens where, you know, the more that you think about being successful, then you kind of find the ways in order to make that happen for yourself, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, you reminded me, Christine, of, you know, law of attraction, right? A lot of people talk about that and feel like, oh, this law of attraction thing, you know, how can it be possible, right? But this is a scientific way of looking at it and actual research done. There's another one that I wanted to share is this Dr. Timothy Elliott. He's a psychologist at the Virginia Commonwealth University, and this is what it was reported, right, in the journals. It says that people with high hope, they are actually more adaptive in all realms. And when they were looking at this, they were looking at actually two groups of people. One is the patients, and because they were looking at nurses and patients in that kind of study.
Right.
And they were looking at, okay, how long have these people been injured? Yeah. And is it a month? Is it 10 years, 20 years, 40 years? Yeah. And what about the nurses? You know, how do they deal with things like exhaustion, burnout, right? Mm. And also, what about like emotional part of dealing with work? You know, nurses work is also very emotionally draining.
Yeah, very high intensity.
Yeah, very. So they looked at these two groups of people and they found the same thing. In terms of hope, not only for the patients, it really, you know, showed a big difference, but also for the nurses, that if they have that hope, right, they will actually feel like, oh, you know, I really have a meaning in life, right? So it gives them a kind of like existential meaning to what they do. And because of that, they actually reported fewer symptoms of exhaustion and emotional withdrawal from the patients.
Wow. Mm. Yeah, you know, I think that really what it boils down to is that the reason why visions work is because they kind of give hope, a purpose, right? You know, to strive towards and a goal to strive towards. So, you know, creating a vision for your organization effectively gives your organization something to hope for. And then in line with that, you know, it gives a motivation to make that real, as well as a goal for both internal and also external parties to see and to strive towards. So, you know, how do we then start creating a vision for our organization?
Yeah, and just to add on a little bit before we get into that, it also reminded me, I mean, things that you are saying,
right,
reminded me of another thing, which is like, you know how hope gives all this kind of like a hinge or anchor for people in life?
Mm-hmm.
And vision gives that to organizations and teams and people, right? So this is the other thing that I heard from a podcast.
Okay, great.
Okay, from Tim Ferriss.
Tim Ferriss, cool.
Yeah, cool, yeah. And so he was interviewing this author, Greg McKeown, and I read up on it and stuff. And he was saying, you know what? You should not just think of the word focus, because we're talking about focus. It helps people focus.
Right.
Not just think of the word focus as a verb, which is what we usually do.
Think of it as a noun as well?
Both. Exactly. You know, so I think kind of that's how it works with vision as well. Yeah, so and it kind of like gives focus to both the internal and external people.
Mm.
Internally, you kind of like, okay, I know, you know, what I should be doing as aligned to my vision. But externally, I think also your clients, your, you know, people who work with you will like, oh, okay, we know why we are working with you as well, you know. Yeah. So, yeah. So I just wanted to kind of like get that off, because I thought that, you know, what you brought about focus is very important there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay. Coming back to the question.
Yes.
So coming back to the question. So where do we start if we want to build a vision?
Mm-hmm.
What's the question? Right. I think the first of all is really relooking again, why does the organization exist?
Right.
And it could be organization, it could be team, because I think, and to some listeners, perhaps, you know, if they're not so corporatized in a way,
right,
but your team consists of people whom you are together with,
mm-hmm,
it could even be your family.
Right.
Right. So in organizations, for example, you know, always if you ask the founders, why do you exist? They would have a very clear idea.
Mm.
Oh, I do hope they have.
I mean, that would be kind of ideal, one assumes, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that larger purpose, you know, that higher purpose in life or whatever it is that they're trying to deliver.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that is the first question. And I think it's usually beyond making money, lah, you know.
I mean, again, I understand we live in a capitalist society, but it's also better, I think, and also more, I guess, effective if your purpose for your organization revolves around not just making money, surely?
Yep. Yep. And I think closer to home, we think of like Air Asia or something like that, then, you know, they always talk about, oh, now everybody can fly. So that's a bigger purpose, right? And I think it has really enabled a lot of people to fly, right? Of course, in, you know, a more global one is like Facebook. They talk about how to help people stay connected.
Yeah.
Yeah, so things like that. And of course, for Leaderonomics, where I come from,
it's
about building communities of love, you know, growing people into leaders and transforming the nation. So that's really the first step to look at, why do you exist?
Mm.
Because the vision has to be very, very well connected with why you exist.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's the first step.
Mm.
And I think for those who struggle to think about this, a suggestion that I can have is this, because I have worked with different clients or others who say that, you know, where do I start, right? And one way, okay, this sounds a little bit big, but one way is to look at the United Nations SDG.
Okay.
Yeah. That's the Sustainable Development Goal, whereby there is a objective where they are trying to have peace and prosperity for people and the planet now and the future. And they have actually 17 goals.
Right.
So in the 17 goals, if really you are thinking like, okay, I know I've built something and I want it to be linked to a bigger purpose. Where do I start? Okay. Maybe this is one way. Yeah, just Google that.
Yeah, because actually what I was about to say is that, you know, when it comes to visions, I think people can sometimes be intimidated because it feels like you have to decide exactly what your larger purpose is in that moment. Like, you know, not everyone can fly. It's like, how do you even begin to consider that, right?
But think about that, right?
Yeah, but I think one of the most important things to remember when you're thinking about vision is like, yes, obviously visions have to be aspirational, but when you break them down, they should also be realistic, I think, as well, you know?
Mm.
With Now Everyone Can Fly, you're an airline company. So yes, it's a realistic vision for you to have, and you fulfill that by being a low cost carrier airline, right? Instead of having higher costs, and that's how the realistic version of that vision like manifests, right?
Yeah, I think if I can like paraphrase that a little bit,
yeah, go for it.
It sounds like which is true. You know, number one is knowing why you exist, but number two, making sure it's aspirational, because you don't want like a vision that you can achieve tomorrow, kind of thing. You know, so you got to think bigger than that,
long term.
Yeah, long term. You know, what do I want to do for this planet? What do I do for the people around us, right? But also, you brought up a very good point that it must be something tangible. You know, people must be able to visualize it. Otherwise, it can be like really up there, you know, the 10,000 feet. And yes, it's nice to look at, but if I can't even imagine it, especially if you're an employee, then it becomes a little bit more of a struggle. How are we supposed to focus, which we just talked about, when it's so high in the air?
Right. Yeah. You know, I guess the next question to ask is that there's another misconception about who develops a vision for an organization or a team, right? You know, I think a lot of people assume that it's like just the leader's, prerogative, or it's like management's prerogative if it's the whole company. But that's not the case, right?
Yeah. And that's a very good point because, well, depending on where you're standing, a lot of times people are just like looking upwards and say, all right, not my problem, you know, somebody else's problem. Yeah. But I think it's more than that. Like what you pointed out, it is really involving everybody. Now, of course, somebody has to first put the stick in the ground, right?
Yeah.
And that's usually the founder and the shareholders or some other critical, stakeholders. But aside from that, really what we have found in like the science of building leaders research, which we do, we actually interview a lot of top leaders just to find out actually what makes it tick, you know. And in that, across the board, we found out that, you know, for vision setting, those who were effective actually got the rest of the organization involved in it. So they managed to get the buy-in. And of course, you then need to set up time separately. You know, you can't be like saying, oh, we're running operations, but let's decide what's our vision. That's kind
of
hard.
We'll kind of discuss a little bit more about the, how to kind of create that vision. But, I think it's important that you mentioned, the best leaders will make that a team effort, not just within their management team, but the whole organization, right? And because also, how can you expect your organization to strive towards a purpose that they're not involved in developing?
Right, they wouldn't be buying.
Absolutely not. It's time for a short break now, but after that, I'll continue speaking to Caroline Ong about the process of developing an organizational vision. Stay tuned to BFM 89.9.
Best for money. BFM 89.9.
You are listening to Raise Your Game on Enterprise. I'm Christine Wong. And before the break, I was speaking to Caroline Ong, who is the Country General Manager for Leadernomics here in Malaysia, about how hope fuels motivation and how that makes visions important. But now we're going to get into the nitty-gritty of how to actually develop that vision for your organization. So, especially for our listeners who is main demographic, we speak to a lot of people who have started their own companies or people who aspire to. So what is like the actual kind of process of sitting down as a team and developing that vision?
Yeah, great question, especially for those who are starting out, right? And I'm really excited that, in our generations right now, it's like people are really, wanting to do something different and start up. Yeah, so I think that's a really great question. So first one is also about questions. You must really ask the right questions, right? And that really, when you, just before the break, we spoke about involving a lot of people and asking the right questions is the first step, because the way that you ask the questions and the type of questions that you ask would get you certain answers or frame the minds of the people to either not be involved or give you the answer that you are looking for.
Right.
Yeah. So generally, when, we discuss about vision, you really must be able to facilitate that kind of discussion on how does the ideal world look like for this organization.
Right.
So if I want my organization to make an impact, or to make a difference, how would that look like? I think that's the first question to, allow people to dream. Like you were saying, right, it must be aspirational.
Yeah.
So you must ask those questions. Instead of like, I'm going to tell you what to do. Okay, do you agree or not? Oh, too bad.
Okay.
Then, it's going to fall flat, right?
Right.
Yeah. So that's the first one. But I think, to dream together, it also takes a lot of sharing. And that's sharing of your experiences, sharing of stories, legacies. And we all come from such diversified background. Mm. There's so much that we can learn and build on top of each other's dreams. And that's when you come together as a team. And that's when you share the stories,
yeah.
you actually feel like, hey, you know what? You know, if we can connect some of these stories or build on them, it would be what we would try to do.
Mm.
So I think that is also very important.
Yeah.
But again, with sharing, I think the main thing is just the trust factor.
Mm,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah. You know, you're not really likely to share if you don't trust the other party.
I think trust is one issue. And then also, you know, you mentioned that, you mentioned a really good point. Sometimes, if you ask the wrong questions, you end up hearing what you want to hear, not what you should be hearing. And I think that's a really big thing, right? When we're having these conversations about, you know, developing a team or a company's vision or whatnot, I think you have to kind of be, I mean, would you say that you have to be kind of ready for challenge, right? And like, welcome and embrace challenge as well.
Yes.
People aren't necessarily going to, you know, disagree with you just because they want to disagree with you, but it's about, you know, trying to have a more holistic view and really take other people's opinions into account as well, right?
Right. And this is, you know, we're making the assumption that the founder or the startup, you know, whichever, would actually be open to the ideas and say that, you know, this is not my way or highway, you know, not that kind, but to be more inclusive.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's, you're right. You need to have that openness or, you know, sometimes we say, you know, as a leader, you must always be vulnerable.
Yeah.
Right. So if you're not, then you'll probably be alone. And, you know, sometimes I joke about this is when you take a look at the back of you, there's nobody, you know, it's just you yourself because you're not ready. You're not ready to be able to share yourself with others. And of course, they will not reciprocate.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So, well, on the other hand, of course, you know, talking about trust is important. But on the other hand, we must also not forget critical thinking.
Yes, of course.
So trust is important for people to open up, but there must be also a very structured process to say that let's not have tunnel vision. Let's not have groupthink.
Mm.
We really, you know, trust each other enough to challenge each other. Is this really it?
Mm.
Is this what we are looking for? And be able to do that, I think, is very important as a team. Otherwise, you end up like, you know, you have a leader who say something and everybody go like, yeah, you know, because you don't employ those skills to look at it critically. And if we are setting this up for long term, as we spoke about, well, ideally, you don't change your vision every year. So it must be something that, you know, we all agree with and really put on those critical conversations to critique the idea, not the person, but critique the idea. And then our formation of the vision becomes more solid.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I think something that you mentioned before the break as well was to set aside a time. And obviously, you know, developing a vision or developing a company is a continuous process. But, you know, really, again, going back to focusing, right? Taking the time to really have that focus and have that spotlight on, okay, let's sit down, let's discuss this, let's actually get all of our brains on the same table.
Yep.
Which is a weird analogy that came out of my mouth right there, but there you go. And really make sure we're all on the same page here as well.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you know, I think that the last real kind of question I have, because this is all obviously looking from the perspective of if you're part of the team or part of the management or the startup or the founder that is creating that vision. But for a lot of us, that isn't necessarily the case, right? Like, I mean, I joined, you know, BFM. I wasn't part of the you know, decade ago management team process, right? So how can someone like me or someone who has just joined a company, you know, help in developing that vision, even though they may not necessarily be high up in the kind of hierarchical chain or they're new or whatever, you know, there must be some way that we can contribute.
Yeah, it's a great question because I think, you know, like just now, the focus is on the founders.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. And they would have their way of thinking. But when a decade later, yeah, people who join may not be like, you know, where did that come from? Okay, you know, and do I just like, you know, receive it or do I, you know, what else can I do?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's excellent question. I think majority of the people do not have that luxury or choice to be doing that. Yeah. So I think for us who are not part of the founders or founding team, I think importantly is really for us to ask ourselves this. So why did we join the organization?
Right.
Okay. Now, that's the first and foremost question because if you are not able to be really convinced yourself why you join, given that the vision is already there. Well, I'm making a big assumption here is before you join, you know, you should have checked out the vision.
Again, you know, when you're applying for jobs, like, research is important too.
Yeah,
okay.
Exactly. Because, you know, imagine joining a place where you don't feel and don't agree with the vision.
Right.
And that's really, unfortunately, setting up yourself for failure.
I mean, granted, also, some people don't necessarily have that luxury. But again, we're working on the assumption that you do.
Yes, that's a very good point. Mm. Yeah, sometimes you don't. Yeah, but in the with the assumption that you do, then, you know, always go for something where your passion lies and there's an alignment of your personal vision with
right.
that. Yeah, but going back to, you know, for ourselves as individuals, when we are contributing to the company, as we are part of looking at the vision, I think it's very important for us to also be focused both ways, right? Now, the focus here is, okay, as individuals, how do we look at the vision and be able to help to contribute in the process of clarifying it? Because like what you mentioned just now, the vision may be there, it may be tangible, but the how to get to the vision, that continues to develop and change. So then we need to ask ourselves, okay, given that that's the vision, so how can we, number one, clarify it if there's any questions around it, but two, how can we contribute, you know, to be able to make that real? What are the things that we can do? Or really, really, if you really don't agree with it and you say, hey, you know what, I think we should change our vision, then are you voicing it out? Are you bringing it out and say that, you know what, boss, I think it's time to change the vision.
Yeah, I have a suggestion or something like that. I think that's one interesting thing. Like, I think there's a lot of pressure to feel that you have to be aligned to your company's vision as well. But if you genuinely think that you can improve it by changing something and you are, again, in a place where you can speak out about that kind of stuff, then, you know, all the more so that you should go for it. And that's not working against it. It's, again, using that critical thinking to help the company.
Yeah. And I'm glad you brought that up because you're right, yeah. We should not take things sitting down, you know. And honestly, I think this is the time where, you know, it's a beautiful time in our lives where people are actually encouraged to say their piece. And that's very important. So if you feel that, you know, something's not right, you know, you just need to stand up and, you know, approach it very openly to say that, how can I be part of the solution?
Right.
Right? I need to be part of the solution, but how can I be part of it? And I think it very much starts with your self-alignment within. Okay. And what I mean by that is, I think last month, my colleague also spoke about this.
Yes, this was Kit Lim talking about developing a vision for yourself.
Yes, exactly. And that self-identity is very important to start with, because if you have that part of it, you are grounded in being who you are, right? And if you are, and a lot of times, this starts from young, right? You begin to have like questions about who you are, who are you going to be and stuff like that. And as a teenager, if you work out through some of these things, you're actually able to get to the point where you know where your anchor is, you know where your perspectives are, you know where you, what you stand for and how you focus yourself. So all of this comes back to that, and that's why very much of, I think, for me personally, I've got two boys. Yeah, and you know, it's about, even in parenting, how do you help your children to be able to find that self-identity? And with that, not only they grow up to be good and great people, but to contribute to wherever they are.
Yeah.
Yeah, that organization, that team, you know, wherever that they are.
Yeah, and obviously, you know, I think that it's impossible to align yourself with a company or an organization if you don't know where your own alignments lie in the first place, right?
Yes.
You have to have like a base and a point, and then you can match those points.
Yeah.
Not so much that you're like, I don't know. And then you just, I mean, obviously it's a journey and you'll figure it out as you go as well. But, you know, you can't really align without having a prior knowledge of what your own alignment is as well. You know, so I think that's really interesting. And that actually about wraps up today's Raise Your Game. Thank you so much, Caroline, for coming in and speaking to us about developing a vision for an organization. And if you want to catch her, or if you even want to catch last month's Leadernomics podcast with Kit Lim, where we talked about developing a vision for self, lucky for you, because we upload all of our podcasts. And if you've missed any of this interview or want to catch up on that one, you can download our podcast and listen to it on our app on the Apple App Store or Google Play. If you're like a little bit more old school, you can head over to bfm.my/podcast. And if you're a little bit new school, you can head over to Spotify, because we're also on there now as well. You've been listening to Raise Your Game on BFM 89.9. Stay tuned.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.